is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. We've got Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, who are the perennial hosts and hostess. And once again, we're lucky to have Randy West with us from the Sondheim Theater. I think the Sondheim and the Arts and Convention Center is a real gem that we can't say enough of how lucky we are to have it in our community. It's become like the foundation around which all the arts here are revolving. It's a, you know, just a building like that is enough to anchor things. But the programs that Randy is developing, and the center as an educational center for musical theater and a center for musical theater for the Midwest, make it also an anchor for the region, and we're so lucky to have Randy and the Sondheim here. Alan had wanted to talk a little bit about Randy about some points.
Well, the last time we interviewed Randy, he began going over the history of the Arts and Convention Center, and I think there's a lot of confusion and speculation in the community about what it's really for, and is it really just for musicals, and you know, what's the future of it, and how does it relate to the community, and what's really going on over there?
It's kind of interesting because the almost 10 years ago, there was a group of people in Fairfield that, the Fairfield Area Community Theater had been performing their summer musicals in the fairgrounds, and you know, they would get rain and you couldn't hear the show, they'd have to cancel the show, or they'd get aggressive animal action and they'd have to stop a show for cows. And excuse me. They just really felt that Fairfield needed a place for theater and concerts and meetings and business meetings and weddings and get-togethers. And so that was the original concept for the center, was to build a community building. And so they started raising money, and they got some money from the state, and they got some money from the city. And the definition of both the theater and the rest of the building got more and more adventurous. I mean, it became a bigger and a better building. It was still with the idea that it would just, you know, if you build it, they will come. And in the middle of that, they did a study and another study that said that the building that they, by then they were heavily invested into building the building, and they did a study that basically a city with a population of 10,000 probably couldn't support that building, that there had to be some kind of programming that would bring money from outside Fairfield to try to underwrite that building. And then They did a mathematical division of what the space was built for and how many square feet there are in different parts of it and what does it cost to keep open, to just try to determine if they solely rented the building, what would people have to pay to keep the building open. And it was a combination of we have a mortgage, we have to pay for utilities, and we have a staff. And by the time they figured that all out, I mean, the theater, which is the most expensive part of the building, I mean, the theater's, you know, $4.5 million or something, in order to just keep that open for a month, it would need to rent for about $2,500 a day if all you were going to do was rent it the times, well, you wouldn't rent it 30 days a month. If you were renting it, you know, how many times could you rent it? The business pavilion would need to rent for about $1,200 a day to just kind of pay for how big it is. And the idea was Donna's dance studio, if they're going to do a recital for a bunch of 10 to 12-year-olds, they're going to go back to the middle school. And they're going to dance on this, not that there's nothing wrong with the stage at the middle school, but when you have a state-of-the-art place with a sprung floor, they should be dancing in the Sondheim Center. And so what we had to do was figure out a way that we could underwrite the cost of the building so that the community could benefit from being in it. And so we looked at a variety of things. We considered just doing a present series, and which is where you just hire acts and bring them in. And Hampshire, which is in Iowa City, is 2,200 seats, and the Des Moines Civic Center is 2,400 seats. So based our stage, our performing arts stage, is comparable to theirs. But our house, where the audience sits, is only 522 people. So we're much smaller than they are. We're an intimate theater compared to putting audience in there. Well, at 2,200 or 2,400, you qualify for what is considered Class A touring, which means, I mean, one weekend about 6 months ago, one theater had Phantom of the Opera and the other had The Producers. And by definition of our house size, at 522 seats, we would qualify for B-level touring. Because if we took an A-level touring show, we would have to charge $200 to $250 a seat to pay them to come here. So the illusion was you'd have Phantom of the Opera, you'd have The Producers, and in Fairfield, you'd have Pump Boys and Dinettes. And our feeling was even the Fairfield people would be going to Phantom of the Opera or The Producers. So we needed to find a way to make the building still work. So what we what we did is we are still doing a present series, but our present series is regional, which means we hire people who are less expensive, and probably the people that we hire to perform in our theater, we're not paying them enough to buy exclusivity, which means they're probably also playing in Des Moines, and they might also be playing in Iowa City. So we advertise those within about an hour of Fairfield, assuming that, you know, it wouldn't behoove us to advertise in Des Moines or Iowa City, because whoever we have is probably going to play there within the year. And that allowed us to book more performances that were more in the $2,500 a night performance, where we could sell tickets. And I remember very clearly when we were raising money for the theater that the CEO of Dexter said quite directly to me, he said, I think that the idea that you've stumbled onto doing a professional musical theater season, you know, is admirable, and I applaud you for your courage. But most of my people that work here, you know, you might be able to attract them to a musical, but it sure isn't going to be the first thing they're going to think about doing when they want to go out. And also, your professional musical theater season is looking at tickets from, you know, $22 to $45. I mean, what are you going to do for my people? Well, part of the present series is to use the theater and the business pavilion to bring in acts that we can afford, that we can charge $12 to $18. We just did a touring show of Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe in the theater, that professional touring show of two professional actors and a whole setup. And we, because of the way we were able to swing that, we were able to charge $1 for kids and $5 for adults, and we completely sold out three shows. There was a show at 10, a show at 1, and a show at 7. And we had seven buses from the Van Buren School District come to the show at 2, and our dear friends at Everybody's bought out two of the shows and gave the tickets to school kids. But part of the idea of the present series was to do things to get people into the theater, to get people into the building that might not have come if we didn't do something that was largely underwritten and very accessible. So we did the Blenders, which was something that we had a lot of people in town that wanted us to do. We did the Blenders, we sold well, we didn't make a lot of money because they cost a certain level and we didn't want to overprice the tickets. We've done other things that we sold. There was actually the piano committee, who's raised the money to put a very wonderful Steinway piano in our theater, did a concert that was a fundraiser for them, also highlighting the piano, and I think they were packed to the gills with people coming in to watch people play the Steinway. So part of what we're trying to do is make Fairfield benefit from using our building. But in order to do that, we then had to find something we could do that could help pay for the building. And right or wrong, the theater is the most expensive piece of real estate that we own. It's the most sophisticated piece of real estate. And unfortunately, right now, orchestras, dance companies, and I'm happy to spend a night of my life listening or watching either, have to be even more aggressively underwritten than theater at this point. That musical theater has the best chance of paying for itself in the performing arts right now. That's why if you go to New York, you'll see many more musicals than you will anything else, and that's also kind of a shame. I mean, I think that, and you don't want to get me on my soapbox, but a country as large as the United States that offers limited funding to the arts. I mean, there's many countries that are much smaller than we are that support their arts financially. We've become, you know, much more economically based, where either corporations or individuals have to underwrite our arts as opposed to the government. So because of that, a lot of our performing arts went away. And so we still support that in premise, but nobody in Iowa, there's two other professional theaters, one does Shakespeare, basically, one does farce, and given our theater, we can do musical theater. I mean, it's a great theater. We have an orchestra pit, we have a fly space, it's acoustically built to house musicals. But everybody, it's funny to listen to, because, you know, everybody thinks, well, this is Randy's vision. And we were in a board meeting the other day, and somebody called it Randy's vision, and one of the board members said, you know, that really isn't entirely fair, because first of all, it connects Randy's ego a little too closely to what we're doing. But this was a whole year and a half process by which we looked at different things that could be done, and we studied and we got information, and we as a board finally agreed that, you know, our best shot was doing musical theater. And then the idea was to be able, well, the national shows that tour into Des Moines and Iowa City, they're really well done. I've never had a bad experience at Hampshire or the Des Moines Civic Center. But you don't see Broadway leads ever in those shows, because who goes on the road are the people that are in choruses or supporting roles. They go on the road to play supporting roles or leads so they can take that experience and go back and try to play bigger roles in New York. Right. Well, our idea was to try to take one or two people who have actually played leads in New York and plop them into our shows, and then mix with them some of the very best Midwest talent. So we'd be, I think that if you saw Forum, we had some outstanding, I mean, beside Richard Kind, Stephen DeRosa, who played the lead in the most recent revival of Into the Woods, Joel Blum, who's been Tony nominated twice, Steve Wilson, who played Armilla Sclerosis, all just remarkable talents. I would also say Sean McCall, who is a dear friend of mine and is the kind of the center of the acting company at the Old Creamery. Now, the Old Creamery specializes in farce, and I was opening with a musical that happens to be a farce. I had directed at the Old Creamery. I called Sean and said, is there any chance that you could come play Hysterium for me? Because he was meant, as much as Richard Kind was meant to be Pseudolus, Sean McCall was meant to be Hysterium. And he said, Randy, I would be thrilled and honored. So first of all, we took a very fine Iowa professional, plucked him right in the middle of the Broadway professionals, and in my opinion, there was no difference. And then you move to the supporting leads of Ophelia, who was played by Diana Upton Hill, someone that's been in our developing pre-professional program for about 3 years, Ryan Gaffney, who I met at the Old Creamery, who's come to Fairfield now. And then when you move into, all the rest, I mean, if I don't mention Margaret Clare, she'll hit me with a stick, but my wife played Dominia, all of the courtesans and all of the eunuchs. I mean, I didn't hear from anybody that you got a sense of the fact that it was diverse. It was a melded evening that you didn't feel to hear the Broadway people, hear the Midwest people. I think all the Midwest people would say that they were on their best game. I mean, they knew that they were stepping up, and it was a thrill to watch that happen. But that was part of the vision, is to, you know, occasionally bring in people that would never tour. People you're either going to have to go to New York, or you can come to the Sondheim Center, and kind of sprinkle that throughout our season. So you know, if you buy the season, you know, where are you going to see Richard Kind in a 522 seat theater? Never. Where are you going to see Len Cariou, who was at the Gala? Len Cariou was the original Sweeney Todd. I mean, he's Broadway royalty, and he's talking to us right now about coming back to play Don Quixote in Man of La Mancha. I mean, we're trying to work out schedules. Len and Stephen DeRosa has already said, and if I'm not Sancho Panza in that, I'm never talking to you again. So, but there's really great buzz about these big Broadway people wanting to come back, and I think, you know, when we start mixing them with college students, really talented college students, and the best of the Midwest, you know, we've been open 18 weeks. I mean, it, when you stop to think where we've been able to go in that amount of time, to the fact that the Sondheim Review, which is the national publication about Sondheim, You know, we're a full two-page article in there this week talking about doing the gala and launching the season. I mean, that we are completely accepted. The Sondheim Society, which is the English version of the Sondheim version that's in the United States, we've had three articles in England about us. And so we've already, we're still building audience. I mean, every show we do, we find more audience. But a dear friend of mine, Jeff Northridge, came to me and said, "Randy, if we weren't able to define the creative piece of this, I mean, if people were coming from Des Moines or Iowa City and feeling like what they saw here, they could have seen in Iowa City or Des Moines, they won't come back." And so far, we've been able to create things that people understood were as special and unique and created in this one little environment that's going to go away. That you either see it while we're doing it, or you miss it, and we've been very happy with audience. Has many people who bought Forum came back to Edges. Many people who came to Edges are coming back to Godspell. So and you can't buy word of mouth. And what's nice is word of mouth has always been wonderful in Fairfield, but we're now finding that word of mouth in the Midwest is starting, that people are calling in to say, "What are you doing in the summer? I want to find out." I mean, that we're coming front of mind to people, and that's really exciting.
Well, and I want to chip in my word of mouth right here on the air, because I've been to all of your shows, and I grew up in New Jersey, and been to many Broadway shows, and been to shows in London, and your shows are just right up there and entertaining from beginning to end. And they don't, sometimes I've gone to shows even in much bigger cities than this, in California and other places, where I was sitting there kind of squirming and a little bit embarrassed because it just didn't do it,
Right.
And there's some people in the cast who were floundering. But in the shows in Sondheim Theater, whatever you're doing, it's definitely working.
Thank you.
So I would highly recommend anybody who's listening to this on the radio, if you haven't been to any of the shows yet in the Sondheim, definitely go. Buy your ticket and go. It's worth every penny that you'll pay. And the theater seats are extremely comfortable on top of that. So,
it's a unique experience for our, I mean, I never in a million years thought I would see that in Fairfield, but now I never thought I'd see Icon in Fairfield either. Mm-hmm. And this is the complementary thing. I'm doing with Icon what you've been doing. I'm known throughout the state now for what we're doing here. People talk about Icon all over the state, and I'm bringing in artists from all around the region, particularly Iowa now, that want to show here. They want to show here because it's a purist art space that you can't find anywhere else in Iowa. So what you're talking about rings very well with what we're trying to do, and these things feed on each other. And it just takes the time it takes for the word of mouth to get around, where people know there's these two things and more things happening in Fairfield, Iowa. And it takes.
And you know,
time.
The first Friday art walks. I mean, there's
right.
there's just a lot of. It's funny. I was talking to somebody, and I said, population is going up. People are moving to Fairfield. And I think for whatever reason that was in the past, whether or not that was Parsons College or the fact that Fairfield had a lot of exciting things going on, and then, of course, there was the movement. A lot of people came here to learn transcendental meditation. And at least the people I'm talking to now, people are coming to Fairfield because there's just a buzz that it's a great place to be. I mean, they might choose to learn transcendental meditation. They might come because they want to learn about sustainable energy. They might come because we have the art galleries that we have. They might come because we have the Sondheim Center. But I think the quality of life, because look, for 10 to 10,000, look at the eclectic restaurants we have. I mean, that people come here and they immediately get that there's something going on in this town that's unique and special and almost otherworldly. I mean, that and I think that to be part of that, and we're all part of that. I mean, from your art gallery to everything that we're doing around the town.
No, it's an exciting energy. I mean, I felt when I'm a Berkeley person. I go back, I mean, from California, and I felt like I was in the middle. I was in Berkeley in 65 through 71. I was in the middle of something that felt like there's something happening here. And I would loop back in my mind on thinking, well, there's something happening in Paris in the 30s and at the turn of the century. And there's these points at where you feel an energy, a collective consciousness energy beginning to stir. And you know when you're in the middle of one of those things. And I really feel like we're in the middle of one of those things here.
Well, going back to what Alan said, just so I don't forget this, another thing that has happened, and I'm really excited about it, is that we had the presents, we're still developing the present series for next year, and we're going to do a present series. We're obviously going to do the Sondheim Center series, but what's happened is with the performances that we've done, performers and promoters have figured out that the Sondheim Center is a very special place to come to hear or see something. And so what that's evolved into is, as a presenter, if I have to pay for the performer and all the costs to promote it and the cost of the building, I've got an extended level of liability. What's happening now, and we're embracing this, is we're getting more and more people coming to us to say, do you want to co-venture something? I mean, we'll pay for the talent, you donate the theater, we'll split the publicity, and we've got a whole lot of stuff starting to cook right now for a folk music series, for a blues series, for an eclectic series. And so it'll by my not trying to make all my money by renting the space, it reduces their anxiety over having to pay for the talent and pay for the space. It also, if they're paying for the talent and we're doing a 60-40 split or something, you know, or a 70-30, it gets people in the building. It gets people to appreciate the fact that the building is a great space and it's great fun. My liability financially is more limited. I can be more open. We've got people that are looking at doing a series where, say, for folk music, they might use the business pavilion 1 month and do something for 150 people in kind of a more limited setting where we'll put up tables and chairs and we'll do wine and coffee and tea. And then the next month, they'll bring in somebody that they think will draw closer to 300 to 400 people and they'll put it in the Sondheim Center. And so I'm talking to many more people now about that. That was not a business model that was in my head when we first got there. I thought we'd rent the theater and then we'd do our own presents thing. And I actually had people come in to say, you know, we've been doing this on our own. Are you interested in a co-venture? And I said, show me how that works. And believe it or not, I think it's kind of a win-win for and there, you know, there's a lot of promoters in Fairfield. There's a lot of people outside Fairfield that have talent in Fairfield that they promote. And I think you're going to see more and more of that kind of the hybrid thing where we will still do a present series. We will still do the Sondheim series. But I think you're also going to see, you know, we're looking at a stand-up comedians series that would just be in the business pavilion. There's quite a few people on circuit that, you know, literally would cost us between $500 and $750 a night to, you know, and we would charge $5 or $10, you know, whatever we did to just get people in the building. And it's not a big fundraiser. We still kind of have to have the musical theater thing to do the heavy lifting on paying for the building. But as soon as that rolls over into kind of being the center of the business model, it then opens us up to be able to do all these other things where if we just kind of break even and make a little money, it's all doable. So that, I know you ask about that, and I wanted to get back to the fact that the whole hybrid thing is brand new and it's literally started cooking in the last 4 to 6 weeks, but I think you're going to see many more things in the future where we're co-venturing with a promoter or a talent.
Well, this I think is really what this venture is teaching us as a town. It's something that we've discovered at ICON in the last 6 or 8 months as Bill has begun branching out and reaching out to artists all around the region instead of pretty much just within Fairfield. And I think, you know, the whole time I've lived here, and I've only lived here contiguously the last 6 or 7 years, but I've been in and out of Fairfield for, you know, 25 years. And the thing that people are always talking about is how there's so much creative potential in Fairfield, but for some reason we haven't found a way to galvanize it or to bring it together and generate something with it. And also, people trying to create financial opportunities and business opportunities are saying, yeah, but the Fairfield market is so small and the people here are all donating their money as much as they can, and they don't have anything left, and they're not going to be buying expensive stuff, whether it's tickets or TV sets. But what's happening now with ICON and with the Sondheim Center is that we're starting to blur the boundaries of Fairfield, and I think that's the key to the whole thing. It's, you know, in this civilization that we live in, things can be very diffuse and very, very far-reaching without having to rely on everything being next door. And Fairfield is a tremendous center of creative energy. The listening to those Broadway professionals talk back to the audience after Forum, they were deeply moved by the audience. They were, I mean, that's, as one of them put it, you know, this is why we live in garrets and eat peanut butter. It's for that experience. And it's not because they get to see their name in lights, because nearly all of them never do. It's because they put 100% of themselves into something. And there's a group of people out there who give back all of that energy multiplied. And it's an unforgettable experience, and it's what makes them continue to be actors and continue to be performers.
Well, you know, theater, by definition, at least by my definition, if you just perform and there isn't an audience, it's an acting exercise. It only becomes theater when you do it in front of people.
Right.
And that energy, when you're a performer and you're performing and your energy is going out and it's met in the air by an audience, it creates something kinetic that is, you can't capture it anywhere else.
Right.
I've directed a lot of television, I've directed some film. You can get it perfect on in film and television, but it'll never be that same mixing of energies. And I gotta tell you that everybody who's performed that's come in from out of town and performed in Iowa audiences are great. I mean, they're just, they in the first 30 seconds, you know that you wanna be there and you wanna perform in front of those people.
And I get the same feedback from the artists I've been bringing down. It's sort of, we take for granted the intelligence and the awareness that's around us here, but the people coming in play and interact with that just go on and on about it. And I would have thought Iowa City would have had more energy than Fairfield, but they come down and tell me that no, this is where they would rather be.
I bet.
We've been interviewing Randy West, just in case you tuned in the middle, and this has been fabulous. It's been educational and exciting, and thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
You've been listening to ICON Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.